Welcome to WrestleWolf AEW Weekly. I am your host, Dr. Damian Gibson. I didn't go to professional wrestling school for 7 years to be called Mr. Blah, 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 blah. All right, big week in AEW. Grand Slam week. We move into New York City. Hey, I'm wrestling here. We're going to go through the worst, mid, and best moments of Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision. Let's get into it. So, worst moments on Dynamite. We'll start with worst, then we go with mid, we end with best, because we want to end on a positive. The worst moment for me was the ending of the MJF Samoa Joe match. I've sort of raised this in a few different arenas and no one seems to care, or, you know, maybe I am the next Jim Cornette and I just care too much about in-ring psychology and storytelling. But let me put this to you. If MJF, say it's 1988, and a wrestler chokes out another wrestler with a piece of rope to win, that wrestler is the bad guy. Right? I know people immediately are going to go, what about Hulk Hogan? He did like eye rakes and back rakes. That's what I didn't like about it. It took me 3 or 4 weeks to get on board with the MJF Adam Cole story. Supposedly it's, there might be something going on with Adam Cole as well. He was asked about it in the... Tony Khan was asked about it in the media scrum today about Adam Cole's situation. I know he kind of looked like he hurt himself last week, but it looks like he's going to be wrestling at WrestleDream. So, and he signed a deal recently. Because remember, he came out and made a big deal about, I'm staying at AEW, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I understand the story leading into the Samoa Joe MJF match was MJF constantly talking about how he was going to choke out Samoa Joe. And he did, but he did it with a piece of ring rope, and Adam Cole helped him hide the evidence from the referee to win. And then it wasn't mentioned on the commentary desk. It hasn't been mentioned in the storytelling. Like, if it's not going to come up or be brought up, then what's the point in doing it? Anyway, look, the likelihood is that Samoa Joe will come back out at some point and say, hey, you know, you didn't beat me properly, blah, 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 blah. So they've got that up their sleeve. But I would just say at the moment, like, this is kind of the problem sometimes, is that there's too much stuff going on at once. It feels like they're trying to keep Samoa Joe strong, so you can't have MJF choke him out with his own move. So we need a piece of ring rope in there to justify it. Also, you know, MJF is still this kind of dodgy guy and you want to plant those ideas in people's heads. But MJF hasn't been, you know, I know it's like, he's a scumbag, but he's our scumbag. He is the babyface. He is a babyface champion at the moment. So, you know, look, there are still rules. There are still psychological wrestling rules that apply. You can't just, you know, it just made no sense to me. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. It ruined the match for me. And has now sort of made me think, like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, also Adam Cole hiding the evidence I don't like, because then it kind of feels like MJF swerving back towards being a heel and Adam Cole 100% having a heel turn in ring. Anyway, it's a small thing, but I feel like it's very important in the presentation of the match. But yeah, Mid was, and look, I've got this in mid because I think there was something that was slightly better to be in the best segment. Sammy turning on Chris Jericho. Now, I said last week, I really went the promo that they did the week before, said it was one of the worst promos Chris has done. I got absolutely swerved here. I didn't see Sammy turning on Chris. Even, like, they pushed it. They really pushed it right up until the end. I was like, what? Jericho's winning again, and what? They're just going to go off and... So I have to apologize. I said I would apologize. I apologize. This is... Not only did they do what I kind of thought in the back of my head they might do, of like, but I thought it would be Chris that would turn on Sammy. This actually makes sense. Sammy turning on Chris, joining the Don Callis family was a nice little twist as well. You know, because it all rolls into each other. Like, Sammy's pissed off about the way that he turned his back on the Appreciation Society, but was just a bit smarter about it than everybody else. Everybody else cracked the shits and left. Sammy pretended to be his friend for a month or so and then kicked him in the nuts and beat the shit out of him and has now joined the Don Callis family, which is... This is going to work really well in Sammy's favor. I thought I was wrong. I thought it would go the other way, that Chris Jericho would be the bad guy and Sammy would be the babyface. But, you know, they've obviously sort of worked out, no, Sammy works better as a heel. Let's make him heel and put him with Don Callis. Great. Yeah, and there's more to this story later on Rampage, so I'll just sort of move on from there. But I just thought that was really good. And the best was Eddie Kingston winning the Ring of Honor Championship. I'm seeing criticism about the match. I'm actually pretty bored of what would be considered like a traditional great match in AEW, which is, you know, leapfrogs, triple swantons off the top rope onto the floor. Like, these are all very impressive moves. But at the end of the day, Claudio and Eddie are going to stand face to face and chop and uppercut the fuck out of each other. And that's what this match was. And Eddie won because he wanted it more. To me, this was a quintessential, like, it's a top five AEW moment. Like, genuinely, I thought the pop for the match was huge in New York. I thought that the match itself told a really good story. I thought the psychology of the match made sense, as I just said. Like, two big boys who really hate each other, so they're going to stand toe-to-toe and beat the shit out of each other. They're not going to be fucking trying to hit the highlight reel because they don't care. They're there to win. And then Eddie winning in New York at Grand Slam. He's now a two-time world champion and is holding two belts. And to me is like the talisman of AEW. He is one of the people that get me excited about tuning into AEW every week. So to see people, there's always got to be something. It was sly. It wasn't like an avalanche. The last 3 or 4 weeks, I've sort of noticed the very negative AEW stuff has sort of disappeared, which is good. It seems like some momentum is building back up behind the company as far as numbers and ratings and just general social media chat about the company. But yeah, Eddie winning the Ring of Honor title. Top five moment. Loved everything about it. Thought Claudio did a pretty good job of selling the match as well. But yeah, just really, 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 really good stuff. Rampage. We move to Rampage now. Worst moment was the Elite winning the Ring of Honor tag title, trios titles. This is, I mean, look, it is coloured by my disliking of the Young Bucks. It does really feel like, you know, we'll have those belts. The Hung Bucks, I fucking hate as a name as well. Just annoys me. Feels juvenile and dumb. And, but also, like, I've actually been getting quite into Ring of Honor in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I don't know. Just having all these, like, big-name stars come and win all the belts but don't show up on the show, it completely detracts. This is my main problem. It's, you know, the Young Bucks, their faces are punchable and I find them very annoying. But it wouldn't matter who. It could have been, you know, people that I like. Could have been House of Black. Could have been the Dark Order. Could have been the Acclaimed. Like, you win the, if you're winning the Ring of Honor trios titles, you've got to show up. And they won't. MJF and Adam Cole haven't been on Ring of Honor television once. I don't even know if they would show up on a Ring of Honor pay-per-view if that was to happen, you know? So, there seem to me, there seems to be a real insistence from Tony to mold the worlds of Ring of Honor and AEW, which I never see anybody liking. I only ever see people complaining about it. There's not enough separation between Ring of Honor and AEW. There's too many belts on TV. And there is, because then you start to, like, introduce New Japan titles as well. And you could see, you know, fucking three, but well, I mean, we've got a Wrestle Dream on. I mean, this is a pay-per-view, so it's slightly different, but you've got Shibata versus Eddie Kingston. There's three belts involved in that match. It's mental. It's mental. And it does, and I don't care what anyone says, it detracts from the meaning of the belts if there's like 15 of them. If every second wrestler is coming to the ring with a belt, it doesn't mean as much. So it, now, like, we're just going to have the Hung Bucks wandering around with belts so they can look like champions. But again, it just, I think that my major problem with AEW at the moment, and there aren't a lot of them, but this is one that's a recurring theme, is that Tony seems to like to hedge his bets. That's what the ending of the Samoa Joe MJF match was. It was like, oh, we've got to keep Joe looking strong. But we want MJF to win the match. So we'll have him choke. We'll have MJF choke out Joe with a ring rope. And this is the same. It's like, oh, well, we want the Young Bucks to look like champions, or the Hung Bucks to look like champions. We don't want the trios belts off the Acclaimed. So we'll just give them the Ring of Honor belts. And you're the booker, you can do whatever you want, but the psychology behind that basically means that, like, oh, well, everyone's a champion, right? Everybody gets a belt. WWE is the same as well. There's 2,000 belts over there too. There's too many. You know, you've got Becky Lynch going down and fucking challenging for NXT belt, so you can have her wandering around with a belt too. It's systemic in wrestling at the moment, and AEW in particular, it's something that I just dislike. So that was my worst moment of Rampage. The mid moment, we can give some props to some female wrestlers. Julia Hart beating Sky Blue. I thought this match was pretty good. I thought there were some really good spots in it. I think Julia Hart is someone that, and Sky Blue to a lesser degree, although Sky Blue needs to, I don't know whether it's a natural thing, but she looks lethargic in the ring. She's got some great stock, like, she's got some great moves in her kit bag that when she hits them, she looks fantastic. But then the rest of the time, the way she holds herself in the ring, it feels like she doesn't want to be there. Which I know isn't the case. It's just that, you know, some people look like a daisy. So she needs to act more of like, yeah, I'm here, I'm doing. she could take a really big page out of Willow's book of, like, every single thing Willow does in the ring, including just the way she comes to the ring, is she gives it 110%. And it doesn't feel like that with Sky Blue. She will hit, you know, a lot of her kicking moves and stuff, where she'll, like, miss the roundhouse kick and then do a sweep kick. And so all that stuff looks great, but it's just the little things, like running to do a lariat or running for a tag, or, like, she just seems to take her time and drag her feet, and it takes away from the excitement of the match. Julia Hart, on the other hand, does not do that. Has a lot of, I think if AEW continues to push her the way that they are, they've got a star in her hands. I really like the kind of spooky, I hate that word, spooky, the dark presentation of her. I think there's something there as well. Her with Brody Lee as well looks good as a juxtaposition, him being her manager. I like that. I would actually keep that running. I know it's happening at the moment because he's injured, but I think it works. I think the presentation works. And she had another match where she beat Kira Hogan on Collision, I think, as well, and then challenged Chris Statlander for the TBS title at WrestleDream, which, you know, not necessarily a dream match, but it's one that I'm interested in, and I'm just happy. I think Julia Hart has really done the hard yards. She was the manager for Griff and Brian Pillman, the Varsity Blondes they were, for like 6 months. You know, basically on Dark and Dark Elevation, maybe a year, then moved to the House of Black, essentially has been their manager for a year and a half, and then over the last 6 months or so has been really getting her reps in with singles competition. She's a good promo, she looks great, she's good in ring, and she's been built up. So it's, you know, waiting to see exactly what happens with that, but really happy for her, and I think it's been done really well. I think it's been a long-term plan from AEW, and they've done a really good job. The best on Rampage, for my mind, was a carryover from the Sammy and Chris Jericho match the night before. Don Callis came to the ring with Sammy and Takesha and basically talked about the Don Callis family. Chris Jericho came out, they started beating down on him, and then Kenny Omega came out for the save, and then we got an announcement of Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, Kota Ibushi versus Takeshita, Sammy, and Will Ospreay at WrestleDream, which very much could be match of the night. I'm really, 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 really looking forward to that match. And again, Don Callis with these young guys doing great work. Kenny and Chris doing the sort of like mega powers thing afterwards. I really liked that as well. I thought the storytelling was good. There wasn't this sort of like sudden change of like, we're best friends now. It was like, oh, we don't like each other, but we'll, you know, we've been around long enough to join forces to beat the shit out of Don Callis. So love that. Collision, the worst. Now, this is actually part of my best. actually, you know what? I'm going to change it around. The worst is, this has got nothing to do with the match. I thought the match was fantastic. Bryan Danielson and Ricky Starks. Ricky is really expanding his portfolio since moving to Collision between the matches with CM Punk and the matches with Bryan Danielson. There isn't really anything he hasn't done so far and is really building his stocks as kind of being like, he's almost the main guy on Collision. I know Bryan Danielson is like the presented as the main guy, but Ricky Starks has been the continuing link and is doing a fantastic job. What I did not like about this match, and it's something that I've brought up at different occasions, and no one seems to, again, seems to care, but I'll keep banging on about it because it annoys me, and I think it's poor storytelling. Aubrey Edwards, and all the referees do this. This is not just me pinpointing Aubrey because she's female. It's because I noticed it significantly in this match. This was a Texas death match, which means anything goes, right? Anything goes. And really, all the referee is there to do is to stop the match when someone is dead, essentially, like is passed out, can't go on anymore. She spent the whole match in the boy's frame. Like, she knows exactly where to be now to make sure that she's, like, dead center, getting as much attention as possible. She's pointing the guys back to the ring. Why? Why the fuck is the referee pointing two people in a hardcore match, in a Texas death match, back to the ring? Right? Like, it there's no... Not like absolutely no reason for her to be doing that, besides the fact that she wants to throw her arms around to get people's attention to make sure that she's on TV. The other thing that happens with her, and they all do, Bryce Ramsburg's really bad for this as well, Paul Tanner's another one, the grimacing and the facial reactions. If you were writing a TV show, like writing a TV show about wrestlers, and you were filming, you know, this guy's wrestling this guy, and they're wrestling, and then in the background you had some day player playing the referee, making the equivalent faces of like, oh, the director would scream, cut, and then walk over to this day player and be like, hey, I just need you standing there. Stop whatever this is. It's overacting. We don't need it. You're a professional referee. You've been watching people hit each other every night for 15 years. Someone hitting each other, like one person hitting another person, you shouldn't react ever to that. And Aubrey just went on and on and on. And it's one of those things, unfortunately, that like when you notice it, when it's really bad, it just completely takes you out of the match. And I spent most of my time watching Aubrey rather than watching this fantastic match that was happening in front of me. I'm trying really hard to not talk about the same things every week, but I feel like this referee thing is out of control. You just need to wind your neck in. You know, like it, you are not part of the show. You're not. You can tell yourselves that you are. You can tell yourself that you're changing the way that wrestling's being presented. I don't care how good of friends you are with the boys out the back. From a presentation standpoint, no one wants to see you. No one wants to hear from you. No one wants to know who you are. I shouldn't know who you are. Right? You're there to count pinfalls and make the show work. I understand you have an important job as far as the production of the TV show, but from a presentation standpoint, I should not see you. I shouldn't think about you. I shouldn't know your names. You should not exist. And grandstanding in the main event to get, you know, like the fact that I was paying attention to you in the main event of Collision, which was a fantastic show, by the way, one of the best Collisions since Punk's left and one of the best Collisions since it started. You know, we're having to pay attention to fucking Aubrey. Mid, Jay White beating Andrade. I've only got that there because I think there's something that was better. Fantastic match. Hope to see more of these guys wrestling against each other. What I did really like, and hopefully we see more of this, is, and again, you know, I'm going to use that word, this is basic wrestling psychology. Bullet Club Gold are the bad guys, and they purposely, like, Jay White was in the ring, the other three guys got up on the apron and stood as four people, as like a four-man wall facing towards Andrade before the bell rang. And it gives this visual representation of he is up against four men in this match. This is a four-on-one competition, which immediately puts you in mind to Barry for Andrade, which is good because he's the babyface. And immediately makes you dislike Bullet Club Gold because they're cowards who won't fight one-on-one. Now, Jay very smartly sort of gets them to jump down at first, but it doesn't matter because the seed has already been planted. And that is good wrestling psychology. And to be fair, for the most part, it's something that AEW is very good at. That's why it's a good show. That's why it's great to watch. But when they don't do things, like there are basic things like the ref thing that doesn't get done well, and it's very frustrating. Jay White gets the win, continues on this role of just not losing at all. And if he does, it's usually Juice that takes the pin. They are protecting Jay. He is a blue chip product for Tony Khan. They are going to make him a champion at some point, and it's going to be fantastic. But in the meantime, Bullet Club Gold, just so much fun to watch. And what I did really, really love, and I really, really hope to see more of this, was getting to see Andrade strut his stuff. He really showed why it was such a big deal when he was signed, why people like myself were so excited when he came to AEW, because this match, when he is given the opportunity to wrestle someone as good as Jay White, this is what you get on TV, on weekly TV. And the best moment, also mid, I just want to sneak in another one, the CJ Miro promo, where we kind of got a lot of storytelling happening there, where CJ was like, I'm going to manage, and I just want you to not go anywhere near who I manage. And Miro just walked away and said he couldn't promise her that. I like this. CJ versus Miro, it's great. And if it also means we get to see more Miro on Collision, awesome. The best was Christian outright winning the TNT Championship. I've been high on Christian since he came to AEW. It's been sort of funny to me, like in the last couple of months, that people are like, Christian's really good. Christian has always been better than good. He has always been spectacular. He has always been a fantastic heel. Always. I mean, the run with Jericho back in the day, like, look, man, I could go fucking on and on, but he, you know, I've said this 1,000 times on the podcast, he does not care what he has to do to get heat. He will look as dumb as he has to. He will say the worst stuff. He doesn't want to be a cool heel. He doesn't want to be a heel where people are like, oh, I just love him so much. He's so funny. He's so great. And like, that has happened naturally because of what he's doing. But, you know, even in this match, still fucking over Luchasaurus and making him like put, you know, Christian making Luchasaurus put him on his shoulders so he could parade him around after he had fucked over Luchasaurus to win the belt. Again, just basic, great heel psychology that makes you understand this guy is bad. This guy's bad. Yes, he's funny, the dad stuff, blah, blah, blah. Yes, Nigel McGuinness is even funnier with it on commentary. Yeah, we're all having a good time. But at the base of it, at the base of the story, this is a bad guy who doesn't give a fuck about anybody. He only cares about himself. Only. You know, and this all comes back. This whole character comes back from Jungle Boy beating Christian in the Battle Royale that he debuted in like 3 years ago. And in that time, won the Impact World Championship, like had matches with Kenny Omega. He's so petty and small that he's still this upset. You know, like still this upset. Like his whole personality is based on Jack Perry. You know, like, like he hates Jack Perry so much that like he's going after anybody else that he can think of, you know, Nick Wayne, etc., etc. I thought this Collision was great. Outside of Aubrey's terrible fucking face acting and not seeming to understand the rules of a Texas Death Match, I thought this Collision was great. I actually thought all the shows were really fun to watch this week. Maybe having a 2-hour Rampage is like, I know there's going to be a lot of people groaning at that suggestion, including myself as soon as I said it, but I don't know, man. There's something about the 2 hours this week that seemed to give everything more room. It was more story again. You know, maybe 2 hour Rampage is what's going to save Rampage. All right. Well, I'm going to leave that there. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. I will do a Wrestle Dream episode, hopefully within 24 hours of it airing. I'm really, really looking forward to the pay-per-view. I think it's going to be fantastic. Inoki's family are coming over to America for the pay-per-view, so that will be nice, seeing it's a tribute for him. Yeah, I can't wait, man. There's just so many good matches. I mean, Danielson's... You had me at Danielson Zack Sabre Jr. But the rest of the matches on the card, super great. FTR versus Aussie Open is going to be a banger. That's a low-key... Just keep you... I'm telling you, I watched them at Royal Quest last year. They can low-key steal the show. There's the 3-on-3 tag match that I mentioned earlier. Ospreay and his boys versus Kenny and Chris and Ibushi. Just mental. There's so many more that I can't think of off the top of my head. Or Swerve versus Hangman. That's, you know, low key. That's fun too. So, yeah. Really looking forward to the rest of the stream. Anyway. I am sick again with another cold flu thing, so I'm going to leave you guys here. Until next week, enjoy your wrestling, and I'll join you next week with another episode of WrestleWolf.